My little brother's friends have been camped out at our place for 2 days straight.
Three.
It's because of the Xfinity 10G network. Internet that can handle a house full of screens at once with, like, basically no interruptions. And it's only getting faster. When I was their age, internet like this was a pipe dream.
You sound like my grandpa.
Please go home.
Introducing the next generation 10G network, only from Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
You're listening to Their Only Stories, a podcast that celebrates storytelling and the writers behind those stories. This episode, Portobello, by Hilary Draminsky.
Everything okay?
Jesus fuck.
Didn't see you there. Scared the life out of me.
I'm so sorry, I beg your pardon. Are you all right?
Yeah. Feckin' battery died before I could get a taxi. Guess I'm walking home.
Oh dear. Are you very far?
You wouldn't have a smoke by chance, would you?
Oh, I don't, I'm afraid.
Good. I'm trying to quit anyway. Sorry, could you maybe call a cab for me? I can give you cash, like, or Revolut you, or whatever.
Revolut me?
Bank transfer, kinda.
Oh, of course. I would, but I don't have one.
You've no mobile.
Call me old-fashioned.
Jesus. Don't think I could survive without mine. Must be nice, though. Just disconnect, like.
Yes, it certainly is.
Here, Zari, are you all right?
Oh, yes, of course. Why do you ask?
I just... Sure, it's a bit late for a walk, isn't it? Especially for...
Yes.
Never mind.
For someone my age.
No offense, like.
It's all right. I'm tougher than I look.
Right. Well, better make tracks if I want to get any sleep before work tomorrow.
Are you very far? You didn't say.
Just by the Phoenix Park.
Oh, that's quite a walk.
Oh, could be worse. Lies by the canal, anyway.
Will you be okay on your own? You're not too...
Drunk?
No offense.
None taken. No, I'll be grand. Thanks, though.
I could walk with you for a bit, if you'd like.
Sure. Yeah, all right. Come on, then.
Do you often walk home after that?
Sometimes.
I'm sorry, I don't think I caught your name. I'm Nellie, and you are?
Nellie? Now that's one you don't hear every day. I'm Tess. Teresa. My mum was old-fashioned too.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you, Teresa.
Tess. You too.
I hope you don't mind me tagging along. Well, if you don't mind me saying, you did look very sad when I saw you outside the Portobello there. I just thought... Well, it just didn't seem right for you to be on your own. Not when you seemed so vulnerable. Oh, I'm sorry. I've said something to upset you.
No, I'm fine. It's fine, really. It's really nice to have company, like, spend all night waiting for someone who never turned up, so glad the night wasn't a total waste.
Oh, dear, I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, brought it on myself, I suppose.
I don't understand. Why do you say that?
Oh, Nelly. Promise not to judge me.
I'll do my best.
The woman I was waiting for. We've been seeing each other for a year now. Actually, it was meant to be our anniversary drinks.
And she didn't turn up.
It happens sometimes. More often than not, if I'm honest. I was hoping tonight wouldn't be one of those nights, but... she's married.
Oh.
Yeah. To a man. Which is grand, like, obviously, she's allowed to, you know, be... like, I'm not saying being bi is invalid or whatever, but I just think she's really unhappy with him.
I see.
And she's a bit older than me, so, like, I think... I don't think she ever expected to fall in love with another woman, like, not at this stage, anyway. Sometimes I think it scares her, the way she feels. You're totally judging. You said you wouldn't judge.
I said I'd try. I'm sorry. I'm sure it's very difficult. Complicated.
Still judging.
I'm trying. I really am. But I've been in his shoes and
Shit. You must think I'm a horrible person.
No. I think love is not always so straightforward, and the world is a much bigger place than it was when I was your age. It must be easier to fall in love more than once with such big horizons.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, it's not like I expect her to leave her husband. They've kids and all. Or maybe I do. I don't know. I don't know what I expected. Sorry. God. I don't know why I'm telling you this. You must think I've completely lost the plot.
Not at all. I think it's exceptionally easy to trust a stranger. Under the right circumstances.
Yeah. Maybe that's it. Sure, it's not like you're going to tell my mother.
Exactly. Well... perhaps it's for the best.
What? That she didn't show up?
Yes. Maybe it's a sign you should move on to something less complicated.
Oh, you do think I'm a terrible person, don't you? Right. Okay. Enough of that now. I may be a terrible person, but at least I'm not, like... a crack dealer or a serial killer or something.
Thank goodness for silver linings.
So, do you walk a lot of drunk strangers home on random Wednesday nights?
No. I just love the canal at night. The quiet.
Pretty peaceful, all right.
Feels like there's no one else around for miles and miles. Isn't that something? I've lived here for more years than I care to remember. In Portobello.
It's a lovely place.
It is, yes. And do you know, lots of people still swim here.
In this water. I'd be afraid I'd come out with ringworm or scabies or something.
Oh, so you can swim?
No, actually. Not really. Never had much interest in swimming.
I see. You know, Portobello is just full of stories. Well, I remember in 1861, was it? A whole bus full of people drowned. Not too far from here, as a matter of fact.
Jesus.
Oh, yes. They were pulled by horses in those days, and one of the horses reared up and backed the whole bus over the railings of the bridge. No survivors.
Christ. That's very dark, Nelly. Jesus.
Oh, this neighbourhood's seen its fair share of darkness. They say there's a ghost of a man who pushes young girls in and holds them down. Everyone just thinks they were too drunk. Took a fall.
Right. And why would this ghost want to do that?
Who knows? Revenge or some twisted sense of justice, perhaps. Maybe just boredom. Maybe he just likes the way their hair feels in the water as he pushes them under.
Are you trying to scare me now, Nelly, or what?
Yes, actually.
What?
Yes, you should be frightened. You can't swim. And walking alone by the canal late at night, a little too much to drink, upset by your evening, well, anything could happen to someone so vulnerable.
Okay, that's enough of that now. I think you'd better go home.
Knowing your story, they might even think it was suicide. Your friend will be so upset. Oh, she'll probably blame herself.
Right, listen, this isn't funny, so I'm going home, and I suggest you turn around and do the same. Christ!
They always say it's a man!
Get off me! Get off!
A man! A man who drowns the girls in the canal! Oh, but they're wrong, aren't they, Tess? Some things never change. Men get all the glory. Same as it ever was. Bastards! Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go.
That was Portobello, starring Emer Casey and Sinead Keegan. This episode was produced by Kieran Gallagher.
That was Portobello by Hilary Jaminski. Hilary is a multi-talented artist who works in theatre, film, festivals and more. She is best known for her work with the Corps Ensemble and is currently working on a play about professional burnout and live-action fantasy role-playing. Hilary is a powerhouse when it comes to creating great work. But according to her, her real talent is that she is an expert pumpkin carver. Without further ado, Miss Hilary Jaminski.
Hello, Hilary, and welcome to Their Only Stories podcast.
Hi, Emily. I'm delighted to be here.
And we're delighted to have you here. And we just listened to your fabulously spooky piece, Portobello. I think we're all a little scared and need a hug. So I can't wait to ask you some questions and kind of hear a bit of inspiration behind the wonderful piece that we just heard. But before we get kind of stuck into that, Hilary, as a member of the Corps Ensemble, you've had to play many roles when it comes to the production of artistic work. Dramaturg, producer, writer, director. Do you have a favorite, or is that like asking, do you have a favorite child?
It is a bit like asking if I have a favorite child, because they're all just so different. Like, and I've been very lucky to be able to wear so many different hats. I could choose a favorite though if I really had to, and I think working as a dramaturg has brought me a lot of joy, like particularly in the last couple of years, just being able to facilitate another writer and help them to find things in their own writing that you know, they weren't aware of. It's really special. And it just makes me so, so happy. Because I'm a writer myself, and I really like it when people, you know, will pick up on some small detail of something, and I go, oh my God, I didn't even realize that. You know, it's just, it's a really cool thing that happens. And yeah, being able to be on the other side of that is just amazing. But they're all so much fun, really. So yeah, if I absolutely had to choose, I'd say dramaturg, but I love them all.
Yeah, I can see that. I could see the passion for the work there. And can I ask, how did you get into kind of dramaturgical work?
I guess kind of by accident, really. Like I've always loved writing, and particularly new writing. And very early on with the Core Ensemble, it was we had this idea to kind of do these new writing nights. And just as someone who really enjoys new work and the development of new work, I was kind of like, oh, I'd love to help kind of put those together. So yeah, it was myself and Joe Flavin, who now is an artistic director over at a fabulous little theater in England. He and I kind of were the two new writing geeks of the company and put the new writing nights together. And it just kind of went from there that I really discovered how much I love giving feedback and helping writers to find their work and find their groove. And yeah, it was just a very, very happy accident.
Amazing. Well, like, as a writer myself, and I've had the honor of working with some fabulous dramaturgs, a dramaturg is just so valuable to a writer, because when you get yourself into a little dark writing hole, dramaturgs just seem to be the people like, it's okay, come out of the hole, I have an idea, here's a ladder, it's okay, you can do it. So it's fair play to you. It's just such a wonderful and very I think people probably don't appreciate a very creative role, because you are creating with the writer very much.
Yeah it's that, like, it's very collaborative, which I suppose it depends very much on what kind of dramaturg you are, because there's, you know, a dramaturg can function in so many different capacities. But like, I certainly in my own practice love the collaborative aspect of that, and love the togetherness of the discovery, and really kind of like going on that journey with the writer. And as you say, kind of trying to find ropes for them to hang on to when they're feeling a bit adrift. It's just, it's a real pleasure. And yeah, it's fantastic.
Amazing. And it could only help that you're a writer yourself, so you can kind of understand the struggles and the euphoria and everything in between.
I've been in the dark hole many, many times.
We all know it well. Speaking of dark and scary places, your audio drama Portobello, it very much plays on the idea of it's not always safe to trust your elders. Can I ask what kind of inspired that idea?
I am really fascinated by female violence. I'm also really fascinated in kind of taking figures who are expected to be one way and really trying to flip them on their heads. So I feel there's this expectation for an older woman in particular to be very gentle and very benevolent, you know, kind, helpful, and just to try and really twist that into something very dark and unexpected. It's really exciting to me. I was kind of trying to think of the story in my head and trying to figure out my kind of bad guy character. And I was like, oh, you know what? I think this should be an older woman. I think that would be really interesting, particularly because then the death is quite violent. It's quite like hands-on. You know, it's not a passive poison over 6 years kind of thing. It's very intense violence, which I just find really fascinating.
Yeah, no, you're dead right. It's so interesting what you were kind of saying there, because I remember listening to, I can't remember the name of it, but a true crime podcast, and they were kind of talking about how traditionally in stories and in real life, poison is considered the murder weapon of women. But actually, if you realistically look at the statistics, poison is more used by men, and violence to kill yeah. other people is more used by women. So it's totally a perception thing. And because we're perceived to believe women aren't violent, we're trusting of them, and that it's even yeah. scarier when they turn on us. So yeah, it's fascinating.
Absolutely. And I just love this idea of like she's clearly, you know, this is maybe not necessarily premeditated, but certainly is something this woman has done before, and it has a fondness for. It's not like it was a spur of the moment kind of crime of passion sort of thing. This is a pleasure for her that has been going on for quite some time. So yeah, I just thought that was a really intriguing space to try to write in.
Completely, yeah. No, and it totally came across that way as well. And it makes it such more an interesting listen than if it was a kind of a more traditional man v woman kind of murder kind of thing.
Yeah.
And having written for both stage and audio, what do you find is the biggest difference? Do you find freedom or restrictions in kind of either form?
So this was my first foray into writing for audio, and I really, really enjoyed it because I've recently discovered that there's something like 2% of the population or something, it's a very small percent of people who can't actually visualize things in their imagination. So if I say to you, Emily, close your eyes and imagine an apple, can you actually see an apple, like on the backs of your eyelids? Can you see an apple in your mind's eye?
I'm trying it now. I think so. But again, I don't know if this is just my imagination craving this, but I think so. Or am I broken?
Well, I'm definitely broken because I'm part of the 2% of people who cannot visualize. I actually wow. like... I don't see anything when I close my eyes. It's just blackness. So my imagination just, I don't know, it's there. It's active. Like, of course it is. But I just do it in this way that I don't even have words for. So actually writing for audio was like really fun because I wasn't trying to visually imagine anything. I was just letting it be in this imaginative world that I actually can process, which is aural. So yeah, I thought it was really fun. I mean, I love writing for stage, and I love like thinking about the visual elements of things. I'm a huge fan of like design and huge fan of kind of trying to work visual elements into my own scripts, but to be able to just like be free from that element entirely, it was surprisingly really joyful experience.
Amazing. Yeah, no, the first time I wrote for audio, I was exactly the same because I think initially my brain went, oh, I don't have any visual cues to help me. Oh gosh, you know, kind of thing. But because I was so used to writing for stage, I suddenly kind of, my brain kind of clicked, went, but I'm also not limited to one space. Like you are on stage, like I can take this anywhere. In theory, I can jump back in time, or I can go to the other side of the world, or something. And then when your brain clicks into that kind of new mode, suddenly the opportunities are kind of endless, you know.
Oh, definitely. It's really true what they say about you know, prompts. And sometimes if somebody just says, okay, well, just write something, write anything. It's like, oh, I can't think of any words. I don't know any words. But then if somebody gives you a little bit of that limitation or parameter, it really unlocks
yeah.
so much potential. And I think putting that sort of limitation on something, or that binding on something of going, okay, you don't have this sense to rely on, it actually yeah. really opens up a totally new world of possibility. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. And what kind of first inspired you to start telling stories, whether it be in any of your many roles of a writer, producer, director? Like, what was the kind of first nugget of passion?
Oh, I have been a book kid since I was like tiny. I think I taught myself to read when I was like 3 or 4. I just was really keen on it. I wanted to do it, so I did it, and have not stopped. So I'm one of those people who has, you know, more books on my bookshelf than I'll ever be able to read. And I just keep adding to it, which is a great little addiction to have. But I have just always been really into stories and reading in particular, like fantasy and sci-fi. I did go through a big horror phase when I was like 11 and 12. So I think that's where it started, because I can remember being, you know, 9 or 10 and sort of writing stories for myself in my free time. You know, I mean, we were asked to do them in school occasionally to write stories, but I would do it like on the weekend at home just because I wanted to. And it was one of those things where I think my parents were a bit concerned that I like would never have friends because I didn't want to go out and play. I didn't want to go out and ride my bike. I wanted to, you know, stay in and read and write and just lose myself in worlds that didn't exist. And I think my parents were a bit confused by that. I think they still are. But yeah, I think it's just been a lifelong obsession, really.
Yeah, but that's absolutely wonderful. As a kid, of course you want, like, why would you go out and play in the real world when you have such a better imagination world in your head? Maybe I'm mad too, but I totally relate.
Yeah, it's just like, well, why would I want to live in a world that doesn't have magic when I could be like reading about magic? It's so much more fun.
Totally, completely. Yeah, and that actually kind of nicely leads me on to my next question, because you very much, in my head anyway, Portobello kind of had a beautiful way of mixing something that's happened in the past or in another kind of world that's just something that is happening right now. Do you think this idea of kind of past repeating itself is something that kind of almost scares us as human? That human nature can't really change?
Yeah, I think it is. It is one of those questions that people grapple with throughout time. Is, are we ever going to learn from our mistakes, and are we ever going to break out of the patterns that haunt us throughout life? And I mean, I don't have an answer. I don't know if I'm in the camp of yes, humans can change, or no, they absolutely can't. I think I kind of go back and forth on that on an almost daily basis. But yeah, I think it's a really interesting space to write in again, is that kind of where the intersection of past and present lives. And certainly when you add in a sort of supernatural element to that, it just makes things even more interesting and exciting, and lots of possibilities to explore there. But yeah, it's sort of, I wanted to kind of play with this idea of like, okay, we've got this older woman who's, you know, a ghost basically. And is she potentially also going to create a new malevolent ghost by continuing her cycle of murdering innocent young ladies? So yeah, it was just a fascinating thing for me, and I'm also kind of into history and like to try and play with that on occasion in my own writing.
Yeah, no, totally, and I can see that it works very well, because human nature, especially in kind of moments like that, I think is fascinating. I remember reading somewhere that like, us as we have a perceived idea of how we would behave in a certain scenario, and how we'd actually behave is completely different. That's often why in horror movies we shout, don't go upstairs, or don't go outside alone, or, you know, kind of thing. But when, because we think that's how we would behave in that scenario. But I read a statistic somewhere that said that most of us would invite someone into our home, even if we were suspicious they were a murderer, out of politeness. And I think what really comes up in yours is this preconceived idea that women are safe, you know, kind of thing. Women aren't threatening, actually, I should say. I will never be threatened or in danger by an older woman, kind of thing. And no matter how much we believe we'd be aware, or that we'd be smarter and be able to spot the ghost, the reality is we wouldn't, you know.
Well, totally. Look, we all like to believe that we would survive the Hunger Games, but like, No, we wouldn't. None of us would. Like, statistically, you and I would both be dead within the first 20 minutes. So I absolutely, like, you think you know what you're going to do, but you really don't. You really don't. And I like to think of myself as a particularly perceptive person, but, like, you know, I'm not. I'm just a person. Yeah, I'm just a person who doesn't know what they're doing and doesn't know what I'm gonna do in any given scenario. So yeah, I it's an interesting thing to try and explore.
Yeah, totally. And kind of leading on from that idea of, like, you know, the past kind of stays the same as the future. It actually, when I was reading and listening to Portobello, it really actually reminded me a little bit of Little Red Riding Hood, of the idea of the wolf disguising himself as a frail, friendly granny, and then actually being this kind of evil creature, which, like in yours, you have this frail older woman who just kindly wants to walk this very upset young woman home, and actually turns out to be an evil ghost. Do you think fairy tales kind of inspire us all, yourself included?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I am I'm in love with fairy tales and myth and lore. It just... I believe that there's a reason why it pervades everything, you know, centuries and centuries and centuries after the stories originated. And I think it's because they help us to make sense of things, or they raise questions about things that we don't necessarily consider, like, who can you trust? So yeah, I'm a huge fan of fairy tales. I'm certain that they influence my own storytelling, both deliberately and accidentally. And I think, yeah, I think fairy tales sometimes get a bad rap for being, you know, flimsy and silly and for children, but they're really not. They're for grown-ups too. And I think we could all learn a thing or two or three from fairy tales and from revisiting them more, you know, for ourselves, not just for our kids or our nieces and nephews.
That's exactly, I completely agree. I think I may be wrong in saying this, but I think fairy tales originally weren't even for kids. I think they were for adults. They were like these ideas of cautionary tales of beware of your stranger, beware of someone in disguise, all is not what it seems. It was very much life lessons, not for children, yes, but also for adults. And not much has changed. I think we could all use listen to those life lessons definitely a little bit more. So finally, I have one more question for you before I let you go on your merry way. Their Only Story season one is very much themed around horror and spooky encounters. Have you ever had your own life spooky experience?
Okay, I have. Recently, this is a really strange thing. I've been finding safety pins in my bed. I don't know where they're coming from. I don't know. Like, I have, over the last couple of days, have taken like 4 safety pins out of my bed and put them away, only to come back into my room and find another safety pin like on my pillow, which I don't know. I don't know what's happening. I could blame it on my cat, but I don't think he's that clever.
Oh my God.
It's really, really weird. I don't know who's trying to tell me what, but message received. So yeah, that's been a bit strange. And then I remember very, very distinctly when I was about 14 or 15, maybe a bit younger even, my mom and I went on a girls' trip, just a long weekend, to South Carolina, I think it was, and we lived in Tennessee at the time, and we went to go visit this fort. It was like an old, you know, historical fort. I don't know much about where it was. I don't really remember, but I remember the two of us going into one of the like basement kind of bunker spaces, and there was only one door to get in and to get out. And it was a very small space, and we went in, just the two of us, and there was no one else there in the room. It was just kind of like you know, two rooms that were connected, but you could see one from the other one. And we could see there was no one there. And we were just kind of walking around looking at, you know, the information plaques and reading about whatever room we were in. And the door slammed and there were footsteps, but there was no one there.
Oh my God, that's terrifying.
There was no one there. And like we, you know, we heard the door slam, but didn't actually see the door open or close. So it was just that we heard the door slam and then footsteps, and then we got out of there pretty quickly.
Oh my God, that's freaky. That gives me chills. To be honest, I think I'm more freaked out by your first story of the paperclips and your bed, or not the paperclips, the safety pins in your bed. Like that. Do you have any neighbors that have it out for you? Like
I'm getting really concerned. Scary. Yeah, I'm a little bit like maybe I should close my windows at night because what's coming into my bedroom right now?
Oh my God. Okay, well, if any of Hillary's neighbors are listening, please stop. We like her. We don't want her to be pinned to death.
If you don't hear from me again in the next couple of weeks, maybe check on me, Emily.
I definitely will. I'm highly concerned now, but yeah, Jesus. But yeah, that's amazing. Thank you so much, and I really, really enjoyed chatting to you, and I really enjoyed your audio drama. It's fantastic, and especially for your first attempt into audio, you'd never know. It was absolutely amazing. So well done.
Thank you so much, Emily. It was a real pleasure.
And thank you.
This episode was presented by Emily Gilmore Murphy, with sounds and editing by Kieran Gallagher. Their Only Stories is produced by Rise Productions in association with the Head Stuff Podcast Network and funded by the Arts Council of Ireland. For more, check out our website, riseproductions.com. Thank you for listening.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Headstuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.
Thanks to the Xfinity 10G network, my little brother's friends won't leave our house. When I was their age, internet with basically no interruptions was a pipe dream.
You sound like my grandpa.
Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas.